The Israelis can plant in these telephone numbers. Of course, people will call to the Lebanese army intelligence for questioning. It was believed that they were spies based upon the analysis of telephone records, and after looking into the issue, it was discovered that they were not spies. And so this is something which we must all be vigilant towards, because certain people are being insulted, because phone numbers are being planted into their phones. And just because someone is summoned, and this is something which is leaked in the Lebanese media, just because someone is summoned, his family is insulted, then it's discovered that he is not a spy, or that the information which is possessed is not enough information to accuse a specific individual of being a spy. So we must be vigilant towards this. In addition, it has been discovered that the Israelis can play around with the phone records and play around with the data by adding or deleting some data or amending some of the data, or amending some of the telephone numbers. I don't want to look into the, go more into the technological or technical detail. I want to look at the result. The result means two things. First of all, we have complete infiltration, and second, we have complete Israeli control of Lebanon's telecommunications sector. When the Lebanese telecommunications minister and all of the team who was present, team which was present at the press conference, when they gave this information at the press conference, they gave this information based on a request made by the Telecommunications Parliamentary Committee in Lebanon. Some members of parliament, the Parliamentary Committee for Telecommunications, said, please explain these details to the Lebanese people, because this is something which concerns the Lebanese people, and hence the Lebanese telecommunications minister and those who were with him explained this issue during a press conference. So this is a national educational security achievement which was made by the Lebanese, and which was reflected by the Lebanese in the press conference which was held. Now, after the press conference, what happened? What is our responsibility? How do we deal with these facts, with this discovery, with this discovery, with this achievement? One of the results which was displayed by the press conference is the following. First of all, the Israeli issue. We have a country called Lebanon, we have an enemy called Israel, and Israel has penetrated this country and is in control of its telecommunications sector. This is one side. The other side is what makes us reach the international investigation, the UN probe into the Hariri Tribunal, and the kind of evidence which the special prosecutor wants to depend on in his indictment. Some people in Lebanon have mixed these two together. First of all, I'm saying put the second issue regarding the UN probe and the Hariri Tribunal and Belmar and the international communications, put it aside. Let's focus on the first part. The hostility and the political divisions and the political campaigns, let's put this aside as well. I'll go back to it. We have something very important. Put everything else aside. We are Lebanese. We have a Lebanese army. We have institutions. We have people. We have people who speak on the telephone. We're probably the biggest country, the country with the highest number of mobile phones in the world. People here are saying that our sector is penetrated, is controlled, this telecommunications sector, and the capabilities of the enemy is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, very, very highly developed capabilities. Doesn't this deserve a condemnation by all the officials in the Lebanese state? All the officials, president, prime minister, MPs, doesn't this deserve this Israeli infiltration, this Israeli aggression, this very, very dangerous aggression on our security and on our sovereignty? On our sovereignty as well. Of course, most dangerous on our security, on the security of the people, on our personal security as Lebanese, and on our national security as a state, and as a community, and as a people. Doesn't this deserve condemnation? Doesn't this deserve us to raise our voices? As I said before, some people swallowed their tongues here as well. Some people swallowed their tongues. They swallowed their tongues against who? Against Israel. Who made the achievement? The Lebanese state. This is the Lebanese telecommunications ministry. An official body which made such an achievement and which is protecting the country. and is trying to raise this problem. But despite this, we have some Lebanese leaders, some Lebanese officials, some leaders of Lebanese parties who swallowed their tongues and didn't make any comment, as if nothing had happened, as if there is no such dangerous file, as if the Israelis didn't make this infiltration, as if the Israelis don't control our telecommunications sector, as if no aggression occurred. In the International Telecommunications Conference, which the Lebanese participated in, the International Conference condemned Israel, but at the same time some Lebanese were silent and did not condemn Israel. What does this show to you? These developments, these political developments, uncover the true identity of the people, the true affiliation of the people, the truth about the people, their background, their real aims, their lies, their honesty. Whoever believes that Israel is an enemy, he at least must condemn Israel and condemn this Israeli aggression on our telecommunications sector. People must come and condemn this enemy. If you don't want to thank the Ministry of Telecommunications because you don't like the Minister of Telecommunications, okay, this is kids, this is child's play. But if you don't want to thank them, if you like the Minister of Telecommunications or not, if you like the Ministry or not, if you like the experts or not, whether you like this or not, there is a big national achievement which has been made, and all Lebanese must thank them for this achievement. Number three, what is the plan? What is the Lebanese state's plan? We need a plan to tackle this issue. This Israeli infiltration requires a plan. We must put together a plan to prevent this infiltration, to prevent this aggression, and to protect the telecommunications sector, and to protect the personal liberty and the national security. This is the responsibility of the state, not the resistance, not only the responsibility of the Ministry of Telecommunications, it's the responsibility of the Lebanese state. Where is the state now? We might not call on the state now, but after the cabinet holds its meeting, we must all call on the cabinet to draw up a plan. We have certain parties which are required, according to their jobs, who are required, beginning from now, to draw up or put together plans to confront this Israeli infiltration and this Israeli aggression. Now, if I want to go to the other side regarding the UN-backed probe into the Hariri assassination, this is what is making many people silent and not condemn. This is what makes many not condemn this Israeli infiltration. For example, in all the reactions, I never looked at an educational discussion for what was said in the press conference. Some said that the timing is suspicious. What do you mean the timing is suspicious? We have some honorable, noble people who uncovered the truth and quickly went to express the truth in front of all of the Lebanese. Is this timing suspicious? No, the delay is suspicious. The delay is national betrayal. But to go ahead and display all of these facts, which were discovered recently after certain spies were arrested and after these educational efforts and technical efforts were pursued, after this occurred, we went ahead quickly and displayed to the Lebanese public opinion what was achieved. Why were they silent? Very briefly, very, very simply, they were silent because the information which we displayed means that Mr. Belmar, the special prosecutor for the Hariri Tribunal, you are going towards, you are putting your indictment is based upon telephone or telecommunications, and such an indictment is not credible. And so some were silent, some said that the timing was suspicious, and I said, let's go ahead, let's make a technical argument, a technical discussion. This is when it comes to the telecommunications. That's enough for telecommunications. And now I'll go to speak about the latest developments regarding the Hariri Tribunal. Regarding the Hariri Tribunal, as time goes by, they make amendments to the laws of the tribunal and the rules and the procedures, etc., etc. Of course, we have a tribunal which has been assigned by the Security Council to put together a body and to make its own rules. And it's as if it's a body which can make its own laws and amend its own laws whenever it wants. And that's very strange. How can you give this tribunal such an authority? Not very long ago, we heard about some amendments which were made to the tribunal. I don't want to go into a legal argument, but I would like to ask some questions. I have some question marks. We asked some legal experts, we asked some lawyers, we asked them, give us answers, but I don't want to say that the time was enough for me to reach concrete results. However, what we heard from the legal experts is enough to ask them questions, not to reach concrete results, but to ask questions, which we must really, really focus on. The first question is, we know that in specific countries, for example, in Lebanon, we have trials in absentia, and when the accused comes to the country, the, of course, sentence which he was given in absentia is cancelled, and then he's put on trial once again. We asked the question, have we previously witnessed trials in absentia in the international tribunals? Those whom we asked said no, this has never happened in international tribunals. In international tribunals, we never have sentences made in absentia. Indictments are made, but they never hold the trial until the accused comes, is present in front of the judge. This goes for all tribunals except this Hariri tribunal. This is one question mark I have. The second question mark is that previously, in the international tribunals, are they silent towards what the witness says or who the witnesses are? What the response we got from legal experts is this never happens, neither in the international tribunals nor in the tribunals inside countries. Can you be silent to the people and while you hide the witness, meaning those who are accused can never question the witness? They can never ask the witness, where did you see me? What are you accusing me? Based upon what? The tribunal also is silent regarding the witness. This Hariri tribunal is silent when it comes to the whereabouts of the witness and questioning. It doesn't allow the questioning of the witness, or it seems that it won't allow the questioning of the witness. Of course, have we previously witnessed a tribunal getting a testimony from a witness which is written without the witness going to the tribunal, approaching the tribunal? There is also something which is very, very important. When a certain tribunal takes it very easy with the evidence which is given to it, when we have a tribunal, for example, which is being held in Sierra Leone or Zimbabwe, it's maybe a simple issue, but when we witness a Hariri tribunal, this is a very, very important tribunal which concerns the fate of a country. I want to ask a question to all those who have any knowledge about law and about legal proceedings. When they say that justice is coming, what kind of justice? They take the information they have so lightly, they don't look into, they don't verify the sources of the evidence which they have. The direction which the International Tribunal is going to, does it show that justice will be achieved? The previous experience we have tells us that we have an international community which is adapting its laws, which is adapting its proceedings in the way which facilitates the release of a political indictment which has been prepared beforehand. And I would like to tell you, right now, when we leave it for the legal experts, if we have any tribunal which is the weakest and which is most vulnerable to be penetrated legally and from judicial perspective, it is this tribunal. It is the weakest. Also, regarding the tribunal as well, many say that when we confront the crises, let's resort to the constitutional institutions. They always speak about the constitution and the constitutional institutions because they say that they are people who behave according to the constitution and they accuse us of being militias who are outside the law. I'd like to ask those who speak in this way, I'd like to ask them the following. This tribunal, according to Lebanese constitutional standards, is it a constitutional tribunal? Is it a result of the Lebanese constitutional institutions? Let them answer this question. Anyway, next time a press conference will be held in the future to propose to discuss this matter, whether or not this tribunal is in accordance with the Lebanese constitution. The press conference will be based upon the studies of many experts on the Lebanese constitution. Their result is very clear. This tribunal has nothing to do legally or constitutionally, has nothing to do with Lebanon. This is a Security Council resolution. Yes, the Security Council which divided Palestine, the Security Council which recognized Israel's existence, the Security Council which covers all the sanctions on all governments and people in the world, the Security Council which is a tool in the hands of the United States of America, this is a Security Council decision. Do you want to tell me this is international legitimacy? That's something else. It's an international decision, but is it international legitimacy? This is something else. Is it Lebanese legitimacy? Is it based on the Lebanese constitution? We all know how this happened. We all know how they refused to give us time to discuss this issue. We all know how the president, how the parliament was not allowed to look into this issue of the establishment of a tribunal. So this must be discussed, not to attack the tribunal, but to display the facts and also in order to respond to those who always tell us to behave in accordance with the Constitution. I'd like to answer those by saying, why don't you behave in accordance with the Constitution? Because you are supporting a tribunal which is not based and not in accordance or in agreement with the Lebanese Constitution. Now, I'd like also to speak about the tribunal in another perspective. We have a new development, the Israeli involvement, the Israeli statements regarding the tribunal, the Israeli talk regarding the tribunal. I'm not speaking about Israeli newspapers, Haaretz or Ma'arif, no, Israeli officials themselves, that's what I'm talking about. Israeli officials are saying we, the Israelis, provided the UN-backed probe with information and evidence and we are cooperating. And the UN-backed probe, instead of going and investigating with the Israelis and investigating about the possibility of Israeli involvement in the assassination, it cooperated with the Israelis against its biggest enemy. Does this serve the march toward justice? The Israelis themselves are talking. It's not me. I'm not inventing it. This investigation, which ignores possible Israeli involvement in the assassination, did this UN-backed probe investigate with the Israelis after the information which we displayed? At the same time, the Israelis themselves say that they are in close cooperation and communication with the UN-backed probe. And now I'll speak about the efforts to solve the situation, the efforts to reach a solution. Of course, the efforts to achieve a solution must be based upon a central point. Are we convinced that this indictment, which they are saying will be released soon, are they convinced this indictment is a danger for Lebanon, a danger for the resistance, a threat to the resistance or not? Are they convinced about this or not? According to the angle where we look from, some people view this situation as if it's an opportunity to get rid of an enemy, which is called the resistance, because they are in a totally different world. If you want to go down to a lesser extent, this indictment or this direction is a chance to get rid of a competitor, of a challenge, or a competitor on the Lebanese arena, a competitor who is disrupting their projects. And we can also view it from a different angle, the repercussions of this indictment on the country, on the security, stability, strength, on the future, on the well-being of Lebanon. Of course, it's very natural that according to the angle which we view from, this will affect our behavior. So, my dear brothers and sisters, you find that all of those, and here I want to be very, very precise, all those who are concerned with Lebanon's stability, with Lebanon's coexistence, with Lebanon's civil peace, with achieving justice, with everyone being served with justice. Everyone who is concerned with these matters is very concerned with making the Saudi-Syrian effort successful. And you find them always speaking about the importance of believing in the Saudi-Syrian efforts, and you find them supporting the Saudi-Syrian efforts. On the other hand, those who view the issue from a different angle, from the angle of getting rid of an enemy or a competitor, you find they have an opposite view. They say there is no Syrian-Saudi efforts. The contacts have ended. They reached a dead end, the Saudi Arabians and Syrians. You hear them saying this. So, according to the way you view the situation, you have your specific point of view. It's the same as the telecommunications. This uncovers the intentions and the true affiliation and the feelings and the background of those people. Those who really are concerned with the country, they say, no, we must support the Saudi-Syrian efforts. We must say the Saudi-Syrian efforts will achieve something. But those who are not concerned with the country, who only want to live with divisions and want to live with this continued hostility, they view it from a different way and say the Saudi-Syrian efforts have no hope. Now, in the same perspective, we are in support. We are one of those who support the Saudi-Syrian efforts. And anyone who calls for supporting these efforts, whether it be the Iranians or the Qataris or the Turkish, like we heard from the last visit by Recep Tayyip Erdogan to Lebanon, or the last visit by the Qatari Prime Minister to Lebanon, or any government which wants to play a role in addressing this situation, we told them, all those who said they want to help, we told them, please help by supporting the Saudi-Syrian efforts, because these are the this is the only way to make Lebanon exit this danger which we're witnessing today. And I'd like to tell you that we believe in these efforts not because we are optimistic, but because we have facts in our possession. The information I received is that these Saudi-Syrian efforts are still being pursued, and there is still big hope to achieve real concrete results and achieve a solution. Now, when we as Lebanese, when we go back and ask, can we as Lebanese solve the situation? Can we address the matter? Can we take this danger away from our country? Can we take these dangers away from our country, the dangers of the UN-backed probe and the indictment? Yes, the Lebanese are capable of protecting themselves from this danger, and they know how to protect themselves. And the Lebanese cabinet is capable and knows how to protect itself. But what we as Lebanese, what we are in need of is determination and will and decision-making. Now, regarding the efforts to achieve a solution, some in Lebanon don't want a solution, neither before or after the release of the indictment. On the contrary, some have begun to say right from now, after the release of the indictment, the efforts must be enhanced, the international efforts must be enhanced to track down the accused and to give them to what we call the tribunal rainbow, put them under the tribunal rainbow. They're starting to speak now about the process of arresting those who are accused. This tells you that some people want problems, they want to destroy the country. Now, others are saying, no, we want to reach a solution. Regarding reaching a solution right now, based upon the facts we have two different visions regarding the solution. One vision says we must have a Lebanese solution with a Saudi-Syrian cover which has the blessings of all of our friends in the region before the indictment is released, if this indictment is in fact going to be released. And this is something which we believe in. This is what we support. The opposition believes this is our interest, and Syrians, and according to my knowledge, the Saudis also support this vision. We have another vision religion or another belief which says we want a solution, yes, but let's go to the solution after the indictment. And here there's a mistake. This is a mistake. I would like to warn and caution you against this mistake. If this indictment, which the Americans are in such a hurry to release and which the Israelis are in such a hurry to release, if this indictment, celebrations are being made now in Israel for this indictment which they are expected to be released, and this is not a victory, by the way, because in light of your will, any aggression will become a victory. So the indictment is not a loss for us, it's not a defeat for us. But however, some say that the Israelis have begun to make victory celebrations because of the indictment which will lead to the implementation of Security Council Resolution 1559. We all know that the Israelis are very much depending and putting their money on the indictment and the repercussions of the indictment. And I'd like to tell those who support a solution after the indictment, I'd like to tell them what we fear because of the extent of the cooperation and the American-Israeli involvement, if this indictment is released, until people discuss this, until people, by the time they make a solution, by the time this process is completed, 1, 2 weeks, a month, it would have been too late, because we would have lost the initiative. Think very well. Think very clearly, think very hard, so we can take responsibility. That's the difference between pursuing a solution before the indictment and pursuing a solution after the indictment. If we strive to achieve a solution before the indictment, then we will have hence protected the civil peace, we would have protected state, we would have protected the resistance, and whether or not an indictment is made, that won't have a big effect. However, if we look for the solution after the indictment, we would have lost the chance, we would have lost the time, we would have lost the initiative, because the indictment is not something by itself. The indictment is not the whole process. It is a stage of a process. It is a stage of a project which began with the assassination of the martyr Rafiq Hariri and continued with the political assassinations which were happening during the international investigation and during the time where the probe was continuing. So I call on those not to lose time. Do not buy time. Don't say, let's wait now until the indictment is released. And you know, I don't want like to hide anything. I welcome them in Iran, Turkey, anywhere else. But buying time and saying let's wait until the indictment is released and then we can meet and don't worry, no problems will occur. Yes, God willing, no problem will occur if it's only about me and you. But if it's about somewhere else, if it's about outside forces who are depending on this indictment to target the country, then we cannot wait until the indictment is released and depend upon something which is unknown. Some who are saying that tonight or tomorrow we must solve this situation, this is the best way to approach this. Of course, there is still one more point I'd like to make regarding the UN-backed probe. I heard some talk during the last few weeks that we are waiting for the indictment. If the indictment is based upon credible, concrete evidence, we'll accept the indictment and we'll tell everyone we have concrete evidence. And if the indictment is not based upon credible, concrete evidence, we'll reject it. You're saying you reject it, but you're also saying this is a great tribunal, this is a noble tribunal, and it's not politicized. So how can you say you refuse an indictment at the time where you consider this as a noble tribunal? We recognize, we confess that you have brains and you can read the indictment and you can base your judgments on this indictment. Let's take advantage of the time. Go ahead, I call on you now, today. You who have big functioning brains, my dear colleagues, The evidence on the indictment exists, is present in the Der Spiegel magazine, in Le Figaro, and the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is the evidence. That's the evidence. Don't look for it, it's there. Don't waste your time. Bring this evidence. These are media reports. Why was the special prosecutor Belmar? Why was he in such a bad state when he commented on the CBC? Of course, CBC, it spoke about the telephones. The whole file, take it from me, and I know about this situation. I have evidence. The investigation, Belmar's investigation, is the same as what has been published in the Der Spiegel magazine, the Figaro newspaper, and what was broadcasted by CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is Le Figaro, this is Der Spiegel. This is CBC. Read these reports. Look at this media. Look at these media reports. Is this credible evidence which an indictment can be built upon? Can we build an indictment on such evidence which we saw in these media reports, in these media leaks? I call on everyone not to waste time and to take responsibility. Because if the indictment will be released before we reach a solution, outside players will play around with this country and we won't be able hence to tackle, we won't be able to confront the situation. We won't be able to save our country from any civil danger, from any danger to its civil peace. Here I'd like to speak briefly about Ghajar, the village in South Lebanon which Israel said it wanted to withdraw from. The Israelis, what they said is a game. It's about public relations and a media game to cover settlement activity in East Jerusalem, Al-Quds, in the West Bank, to cover all the steps which they took, to cover up all of the Israeli eating away at occupied territory. So they wanted to improve the Israeli image in the eyes of the international community. Of course, Ban Ki-moon and the others who welcome this step are part of this game. And this is an incomplete, suspicious step, the Israeli talk of withdrawing from the Ghajar village. It is very clear that the Israelis are playing around with this at the same time continuing the settlement activity. And between brackets here, I'd like to tell anyone who depends on the Americans, the American administration and all of the United States intervened and called on Netanyahu to freeze settlement activity for 2 months and for 3 months, and they presented Netanyahu with military and financial incentives, and Netanyahu didn't respond to this. He didn't react. He didn't have a positive react. And when he didn't react, and when Netanyahu continued with the settlement activity, what did the Americans say? They expressed their disappointment. Disappointment. They didn't condemn, they only expressed disappointment. You're building in a country which you're occupying even in accordance with Security Council resolutions there, but there was no condemnation from the United Nations or from the international community. They only expressed mere disappointment. But when any small incident occurs where an Israeli soldier is attacked or an Israeli settlement or an Israeli cow was attacked, we see condemnation from all around the world. So concerning the Israeli talk of withdrawing from Ghajar, the northern part or the Lebanese part of Ghajar must be brought back to Lebanese sovereignty incompletely. We don't want to disrupt any agreement, but we cannot say that we support a masked occupation. The Israelis must completely withdraw from Lebanese part of Ghajar, socially and militarily. If the Lebanese army or the Lebanese state wants to send the Lebanese army, okay. If it wants to send Lebanese security services, okay. This is something related to Lebanese sovereignty. The Israelis have no business to say who enters the Lebanese part of Ghajar and who does not. The UNIFIL is not a replacement for the Lebanese army. UNIFIL supports the Lebanese army. There is no meaning for the UNIFIL to be in a place where the Lebanese army is not present. UNIFIL assists the Lebanese army. To say that the UNIFIL sits in Rajab and the Lebanese army is forbidden to enter Rajab, from our point, this means a continued occupation. We will deal with it as a continued occupation. There is something very important we must also mention, which is not mentioned a lot, regarding the stance towards Rajab. The inhabitants, the residents of Rajab, yes, there is a human problem, a humanitarian problem. The residents of Rajab, some of them will stay under occupation and some of them will stay under Lebanese sovereignty. They are relatives. They are relatives with one another. If we keep the road open between them, there's a problem. If we close it, there's a problem. Now, if we tell the people of a Lebanese part of Rajab, go to the occupied territory, go and live in the occupied territory, there is a problem. And this needs a solution. The logical, realistic, and legal, and moral or ethical solution is the following. It might be difficult, but it's the appropriate solution. It's the following. The Israelis must withdraw from all of Rajab, not just from the Lebanese part of Rajab, from the northern and southern part of Rajab, because the other part of Rajab, which is the southern part, is Syrian Arab territory, not Israeli territory. Of course, we don't recognize anything called Israeli territory in the first place. So the solution is that the Israelis must withdraw from all of Rajab. The Lebanese part of Rajab must be returned to Lebanese sovereignty, and the Syrian part of Rajab and the inhabitants of that part will be under Lebanese authority until we demarcate the borders between Syria and Lebanon. So this means the whole village will be under Lebanese sovereignty, and in this way we confront any humanitarian problems. Even in accordance with international law and Security Council resolutions, that's the way to tackle the situation. We cannot ignore the sufferings of the residents of Rajab, whether they be in the northern Lebanese part or the southern Syrian part. This is something I wanted to say regarding Rajab. Now, in conclusion, after all of what I said, I would like to say the following in conclusion. There is no doubt that as every day goes by, we get nearer or closer and closer to a more delicate, sensitive period. Of course, many Lebanese are in a big hurry. They are saying that the indictment will be released in the 5th of December. Some say on the 11th of December. Some say on the 15th of December. Some on the 17th of December. Some on the 20th of December. Anyway, there is no doubt that we are approaching a very sensitive period, and this requires from us to be very wise and to behave with great responsibility and with a solid will, and at the same time to take interest, to look very carefully at our national interests. We are acting in this way, and we are concerned with protecting our country and with protecting our people, side by side with the Lebanese army, with the Lebanese state, with the Lebanese state institutions, and we feel a great responsibility in this perspective. But there is something I'd like to say. Because we are very concerned with our country, because we are concerned with the well-being of our country, because we love our country, this country which we sacrifice, the most valuable martyrs for, many people in the media, Lebanese and foreign media, even in Israeli media, many are saying that Hezbollah is afraid, Hezbollah is worried, and people are staying awake and not sleeping. And by the way, during the last few months, I've been sleeping one more hour extra every night. Nothing, nobody should think about think this way, that we are afraid. Nobody should depend on the resistance being afraid, because this is a wrong way to calculate the situation. We are not afraid. Today, I'd like to tell you, this resistance Not a period in history in Lebanon, ever since 1948 until now, and we did have resistance movements during that period, ever since Lebanon's independence until now. However, never in the history of Lebanon until now have we had a resistance in this strength and in this self-confidence and this capability and this presence. We've never been as strong as we are today. And all of the developments and the transformations, all of the developments which are happening, they serve the following: that the resistance movements and that the resistance bloc in the region and this direction, the direction of resistance, is getting stronger and stronger in the Ummah, in its present and in its future. And the opposite direction, those who oppose resistance, that bloc is getting weaker and weaker. If anyone is saying that before the indictment Hezbollah is subject to pressure but not a lot, after the indictment Hezbollah will be under immense pressure, anyone who is depending on the indictment and believes that the indictment will have an effect on our morale, on our will, on our courage, anyone who thinks in this way is dreaming, is mistaken. Remember 1996, remember that year. In 1996, the resistance was enhancing, or resistance was, of course, improving or strengthening itself in southern Lebanon. And the same was happening with the resistance in Gaza, the Martyrdom operations. At that time, the whole world met in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt to protect Israel. You remember that time? The presidents of America, France, the Prime Minister of Britain, China, Russia, the most of the Arab leaders, the Islamic leaders, the leaders of African countries. A huge international presence was in Sharm el-Sheikh on the level of leaders, presidents, prime ministers, kings. They all participated. Only a small number of countries didn't participate: Lebanon, Syria, Iran, some other countries. So almost the whole world met in Sharm el-Sheikh in 1996, and they announced, they released a statement which said that Hezbollah and Hamas and the Islamic Jihad, they are terrorist organizations. And they put together a committee to discuss how to crush Hezbollah and the Islamic Jihad and Hamas, how to crush them and how to cut off their financial supplying, etc., etc. Didn't this happen in 1996? And a huge media campaign, a psychological campaign, was waged against us. An endless campaign was waged against us and our colleagues in the Palestinian resistance. Didn't this happen or not? What blew away this meeting in Sharm el-Sheikh? They met one time, not again. The Israelis considered that in light of this international condemnation and the international description of Hezbollah as a terrorist organization, in addition to its brothers in Hamas and Islamic Jihad, Israel believed that this was the best time, the best chance to attack Lebanon and to crush Hezbollah in 1996, the grapes of wrath, so that Shimon Peres would become a prime minister once again, become a prime minister on the bones and blood of our children and our men and women. The meeting in Sharm el-Sheikh was a cover for the Israeli war, which was waged against Lebanon in April 1996. What was the result? You witnessed the psychological war which occurred. In one of our ceremonies, we said that you are the tyrants of the world and you met. But we tell you, we are a small number in a small country. However, we are a country which has big faith, and we tell you that those who were told people have gathered around, people have gathered and they are ganged up against you, they answered and said, we depend on God, whatever be the gathering and the gang against us, the gangs against us. In this spirit, In this logic, we went and we confronted the war, the Grapes of Wrath, in April 1996, and the resistance was victorious and Lebanon was victorious. Now, I'd like to tell all those who are making analysis and who are relying on the International Tribunal, those who are saying that the Tribunal might be a cover for a new Israeli war, that this Tribunal is not bigger than the Sharm el-Sheikh meeting. This Tribunal is not more important than Sharm el-Sheikh. In Sharm el-Sheikh, all of the world tyrants were participating. In this Tribunal, some consider themselves not concerned. Some governments consider themselves not concerned with this Tribunal. This Tribunal is being protected and being carried around on the shoulders of the Americans and the Israelis. Some countries, via secret channels, said that they are not concerned with the results of the Tribunal. So this Tribunal is not stronger than the Sharm el-Sheikh meeting. It is nowhere near the extent of the psychological terror which was posed by the Sharm el-Sheikh meeting, where almost all countries were participated. And this Sharm el-Sheikh meeting and the plot was blown away by the strength of our fighters and by the blood of our men, women and children. And the same thing goes today. The same thing should be said today. We were not stronger then than we are today. We did not have more faith than we had today. We were not in a better situation then than we are today, internally and externally as well. So nobody should believe that we will be under pressure before or after the indictment. Let's take responsibility, and the era of depending on anyone in this world being capable of crushing people who have minds and hearts and a will and determination and conviction and a decision to live on its own territory, the territory of the fathers and grandfathers with their heads hung high. This era has passed away. These people who will live in this way will never take anything lightly. Such a people will never accept to be crushed. The time will not go back. Yes, I support what they say. The clock will not go backwards at all. The era whereby you were capable of threatening us and capable of terrorizing us and capable of harming our will or our presence or our dignity, this era has ended. With the blessings of these minds, these hearts, this determination, this education, this knowledge, these graduates in front of us, these people, the men, women, the fathers and mothers, the presidents, the directors, the university professors, with all of your efforts, with all of your blessings, God willing, we will be capable of taking our country to the shore of safety, the shore of safety, whereby we will preserve our dignity and honor and our presence. I would like to congratulate all of you, all of the graduates in front of us. Of course, it is my pleasure to be present amongst you. It would have been my pleasure to be with you in person, but you know our circumstances. Anyway, this shows us the extent of...
Well, as you say, this is the presser by Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah, the Secretary General of Hezbollah Resistance Movement in Lebanon. He's been talking for, we've been actually airing the past 1 hour of this speech, and I'll bring you a gist of what he said in a couple of minutes. Talking of telecommunications network, he said Israel has not only penetrated the telecommunications network in Lebanon, but also fully controls this aspect of Lebanese life. He said the results are, he mentioned 4 or 5 results. He said this way eavesdropping is being carried out, phone conversations are all being heard by Israel. They gather detailed info about all Lebanese nationals, locating their geographical location as well, talking on your cell phone. They track you down wherever you go. They can copy data on your SIM cards and get access to the phone book by which they can call people's contacts in your name. They can also use your telephone and pretend you exist at a point whereas you are elsewhere, and they can use your phone to contact others in your name. Technical experts, he said, have proven all this. He went on to say, in one case, as well, I've discovered there were two lines in one. One of them did not belong to the owner of the line. It was planted by Israel and to get information without the user's knowledge. He said, these manipulations, the telecommunication network is used by Israel for espionage purposes. Many people have been arrested on this basis of the information gathered in this way. But those suspects arrested are not really spies, and they are actually insulted this way. He said, full infiltration and full control of the Lebanese telecommunication system, these are the two major results of these Israeli activities. The Lebanese people are dissatisfied with the fact that this infiltration has happened and their private lives are being monitored. He called on officials and the people to condemn this. He condemned the fact that some leaders and politicians have kept mum and remained silent on this. He said this shows their true affiliation and the goals that they are pursuing. And he said he believes a plan by the government is needed when the next cabinet meeting is held to confront this Israeli infiltration. As for the UN probe into Hariri's assassination, he said indicting people based on manipulated data is not valid. The procedure and rules of the tribunal are undergoing change at times. In international tribunals, trials are not held in absentia, whereas this tribunal does so. And also, the accused are not given the right to see the witness and ask him questions. He said this does not happen in any tribunal anywhere in the world, but it's happening in this one. He said in the next press conference, he will have the results of some studies proving that this tribunal is not stemming out of the Lebanese constitution, and also a lot more of what he said. We don't have time for the rest of it. Thank you for watching Press TV. Stay with us.